very pleased to be joined now by Mark Shapiro, President and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure thing.
I want to ask you the same question we asked Jim Duquette a little earlier, because one of the things that we expect to happen today is, apparently, according to Jesse Sanchez of MLB.com, Scott Boras is going to show up with J.D. Martinez, who's, I guess, sort of the highest profile free agent out there right now. We've seen Scott do this before. I mean, I've been part of many scrums where Scott drops the, oh, by the way, guys, we have a mystery team that just got involved overnight in this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you've been through
Absolutely.
That, too. Bringing a player down to the winter meetings and doing it publicly doesn't necessarily happen. I mean, I think we've had times where I think A.J. Burnett may have come down here before the Jays signed him, but it was just a private meeting. They didn't parade him through the lobby
right.
or anything. How much of an impact on general managers does a strategic
yeah.
move like that
I mean, I would say, you know, we've watched an evolution where it's increasingly less of an impact, probably over the last 10 years in particular. Obviously, I've got a 26 or 7-year window of winter meetings to kind of look at it through. But the nature of winter meetings, when you get, you know, 30 teams, you know, in one hotel with a host of activity and announcements start to get made and there are free agent signings and trades being made, you know, front office executives are competitive beings as well, and adrenaline picks up and the desire to do something can impact. I would counter that by saying 10 years ago, you know, I think all of those emotional levers had a direct impact on transactions and the amount of activity that happened. I think as we exist in the world today, that probably 25 out of 30 teams or 20 out of 30 teams are run in a very calculated way with people who have a very precise way of determining value and making decisions, framing the decisions they make. And thus, you know, the emotional aspects of it that can lead to bad decisions and, you know, more often than good decisions, although probably a good decisions occasionally as well. You know, I think they're less and less, those emotionally driven decisions. So, long answer, you know, to a very short and good question, which is, I would say very little. I think, you know, it's a good opportunity. If he's a guy you're considering, it's a good opportunity to get to know him, to sit down, to, you know, get some understanding of what's important to him, to try to have a meaningful conversation, which will be one very, very, very small piece mm-hmm. of what goes into framing a very massive contract.
As someone who, as you say, has been doing this for a long time, do you miss those days when when front offices were smaller, when you could make a deal on a napkin, and when maybe sometimes you could take advantage of someone who was
I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that. I mean, I think I miss being able to make deals, you know, that, you know, against teams that may not be thinking the same way. It's harder and harder. I had a conversation with Casey Close in the workout room yesterday, who's one of the, you know, the biggest agents in the game. And, you know, we were both talking, whether it's free agency or whether it's trades, how narrow the, you know, the value, the framing of value is for teams when it comes to free agency or trade. So it does allow for efficiency, you know, when you've got a GM who is a little more comfortable in his own skin, who's, you know, a little more of a clear communicator, doesn't feel the need to posture. It's pretty easy to tell pretty quickly, do we align on a trade or not? Whereas the dance was a lot longer, you know, 10 to 15 years ago. I will say this, what I miss nostalgically, Mike, are the relationships, because you used to have to pick up the phone and have a call. And these days, you know, Ross, everything's just text. You know, it's just straight text message. There's never phone calls. There's a phone call at the end of it. So I think that, you know, having to talk through things and wheel and deal a little bit allowed you to build relationships. Those relationships allowed for productive win-win, you know, trade conversations and the guys you knew you could make deal with. So I knew with Jim Henry, he was a straight shooter. I could call him. He and I would connect right away. I'd know whether we had, the ability to make a deal. I'd know he was looking to do a deal that was good for both of us, you know, which was great, which is, there's only 29 potential partners out there. So if you just beat everyone every time, then you're going to, you know, slowly narrow down the people you can ever do a deal with. So you'd like a deal to work out for both teams. That, to me, that's a good thing.
Now, your dad, of course, was a well-known, long-time player agent. Did he ever tell you about, you know, or give you a little insight into the agent's mind at winter meetings? And have you been able to use that that knowledge?
I would say I never directly asked him that question, but I certainly insight into just the agent's perspective. I mean, that's I've always thought that, you know, I looked at the game through the lens of a player, you know, which was from growing up around players and right. from my dad's perspective. So, you know, I default to liking players. You know, most front office people default to, you know, being critical of players because you just, you know, you sit up and you're in a suite and you're looking down. And it's easy to, you know, find flaws and look at negatives. I choose to think about how hard the game is to play. Choose to think about 99% of players want to do well and care and work hard. And when they don't do well, it's not because they didn't care and they didn't work hard. It's just because it's a hard game to play. And that's, you know, there are things outside of their control. So, you know, the systems we've always set up from a player development perspective, the ways we try to put players in positions to be successful, the ways we try to communicate, you know, with them, were based upon my dad being an agent and me looking at the world, you know, through that lens of, you know, we all win if the player does better. You know, and I think you've heard Ross say, and it runs counter to what most fans or agents might want players to believe, but we want to pay the players more, by the way, because if we pay them more, they're doing better. So we want to pay them more.
Yeah, the more production they have, the better off it is for you, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
With Mark Shapiro, and I want to draw on your decades of watching guys and baseball knowledge, because I think one of the things that people are the most excited about the Blue Jays is we're going to have all these prospect reports coming out and all these top 100s, and the debate on Vladimir Guerrero Jr., the people who don't like him will put him second in all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
What's he look like to you compared to guys you've seen? And what's your philosophy on the potential of a guy playing in the major leagues at 19?
So the first question, you know, he's one of the more special. Look, I had Manny Ramirez at 19 years old, so I've been around, you know, some of the more special. Jim Thome at, you know, 20 years old. So I've Hall of Fame guys that came through the Indians farm system. A lot of them, not just a couple, which is pretty cool over a period of a couple decades. So, and Vladdy is one of those special guys where you don't need to be that good a scout, you know, to recognize just how talented he is. He's a, you know, it's a different sound off his bat. It's a different quality of a bat. It's a different presence at the plate. It's right-handed, you know, patience and power. So the only question with him will be where he aligns defensively. I think that's still very much up in the air, very much open.
Is he a better third baseman now than Jim Thome was when you had him at 20?
That's a good question. And I would probably say he's a little better than Jimmy was, you know. But Jim was a great athlete, too. Just, and both were big body guys. Both guys are hard to imagine sustaining, you know, staying at third base over a long period of time. It's hard to imagine that with Vladdy, too. But he may defy that. You know, he's determined. It'll be, a lot of that would be how determined he is to stay at third base. So,
you know, when you look at the Giancarlo Stanton signing by the Yankees, you know, we're hearing now whatever you make of them, because you're pretty well connected in Baltimore, but we're hearing that Manny Machado may be on the market. You know, we're hearing that Tampa Bay may be looking at moving some of the guys, and it sounds almost as if two teams at least in the American League East are resetting. I know that you can't react to what another team does, because what makes you better tomorrow is the same thing that's going to make you better today and probably would have made you better at the end of last season. But when you see that stuff going on, is there any thought in your mind that maybe, I'm going to borrow one of Ross's phrases, you need kind of a soft reset?
Well, I respond to that in a couple ways. You can't help but be emotionally impacted, you know, when teams around you are making big trades. And then you have to pull back to controlling what you can control, looking at your own strategy, looking at your own situation, circumstance, and doing what's best. I've said all along, if we were just running our team without fans and it was an intellectual exercise, we probably would have hit a reset over a year ago. You know, so that I'm not denying, you know, where we are and what, you know, what the strategic alternatives are. But the reality is that a very, very, very high price was paid to put a team on the field that our fans responded to in just an incredible way across an entire country. Mm-hmm. And so as we deliberate on the different strategies and the different directions to go, we feel an obligation to try to field a contending competitive team. And at such time we feel that's not possible, we will pivot. you know, but proactively pivoting based upon the price paid and the way our fans have responded, Jeff, that's why we're not doing that. Yeah. That's why we're trying to remain competitive.
Yeah. And one of the ways that you avoid the whole big pivot and well, maybe this is one of the ways you avoid it, but one of the things that you do to try to make your organization as good as possible is, and you've talked about it a lot, and Ross has talked about it a lot, yeah, give these guys the tools and give these
absolutely
guys the state-of-the-art, you know, take care of them from the beginning all the way up, and that has to do with spring training. And
it
we
does
heard that the county, Pinellas County, passed the bill to fund whatever piece of your new spring training facility,
yeah,
in Dunedin.
Well,
I'll
give you two things. One, I'll comment on the first part of your statement, which is, you know, the only sustainable championship team is going to be built around your own players. And I don't care whether you're the largest markets or the smallest markets or you're a middle market. So obsessively committing to acquiring talent and then developing talent, which is what you're talking about, with the best resources possible, is a big part of all of our energies in baseball operations. It's just not a part that gets reported on or looked at by fans, because we ultimately just look at the tip of the sword, which is our major league team. If the tip of the sword's as sharp as it can possibly be and as strong as it can be, your foundation, you know, your player development system is great. And a big part of that is the shifting mindset from just a spring training facility, which is only where you prepare for 7 weeks, to a state-of-the-art year-round training, development, and rehabilitation facility. We cannot currently do that with Dunedin as it exists. It is strictly a train facility, and that's it for 7 weeks, and barely that. We are very close to putting together all the pieces and parts that will allow us to shift our facility there from one that helps us build a culture and build players that are championship caliber players. So city, county, state, team, four-way partnership, very complex. But we are, you know, you'll rarely hear me optimistic. I just think deals are done or they're not done. I am optimistic, and we are very close, and feel like just after the new year at some point, certainly prior or in the early parts of spring training, we'll have, you know, complete certainty that we're moving forward.
That's the minor league facility.
That's both.
Or both, right?
Yeah,
major and
minor league. Yeah. But we're going to move the major league training
right
over to the minor league,
okay,
build two more fields over there, and renovate the stadium also.
Okay.
But all the training will be where the current minor league complex is.
Now, I'm thinking of the Rogers Center.
Yeah.
You know, I guess beyond the initial shock of, you know, some of the, I wouldn't say shock, but, you know, Tony Staffieri talking in New York, sort of the things that have developed from that. Look, we know you've got a lot, there's a lot of renovations need to be done at the Rogers Center. That's
undeniable. Yeah.
Undeniable. People are talking about whatever ownership situation exists is maybe,
yeah,
well, does it have an impact on free agents and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more concerned with whether or not it has an impact on the stadium. And
yeah.
Has it slowed down any movement towards renovations?
I don't think so. I mean, we've done all of our work. We've done research. We've created a plan. We've made the proposal, you know, to our ownership group, which is obviously a corporate owner. And I think there's uniform agreement that, you know, a renovation has to be done. But it's a broad organization with a lot of needs, and there's a prioritization that they have to do at the ownership level to determine where they allocate capital resources and funds. And so at this point, you know, I feel good about the plan. I feel good about the alignment that there's going to be some attention paid to it and something done. The timing of that kind of lays in the hands of, you know, ownership and our governance group, the CEO and the CFO and all the people at Rogers, who have to determine, you know, where this fits into their all the priorities they've got in running a massive business.
But I mean, I'm not a business major, but it seems to me that things seldom get cheaper the longer you wait to address them.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue than timing and waiting is just, you know, what this will mean to our fans. You know,
right,
it will be kind of renovating our facility in a way that, you know, elevates the fan, you know, experience to in ways they're not even aware of right now, which is really cool because as you think about the lens, and I get excited thinking about it, it also allows us to compete from a revenue perspective in a very tough division because things like as simple as we have the third lowest amount of premium seating in all of Major League Baseball right now, that creates even a bigger resource gap as we talk about. So fans just see, well, you have huge attendance numbers, you must be making a ton of money. Well, our ballpark doesn't allow us to make a ton of money compared to the biggest market team, so we need to renovate to build a better fan experience, one,
right,
but to compete on a revenue, you know, stage with the Red Sox and Yankees too.
But you know, again, knowing what has to be done at that ballpark, can you deal with vendors, sponsors, I don't know, maybe corporate sponsors, maybe you want to sell naming rights to the stadium eventually. Can you deal with that without a clear-cut okay from ownership?
Well, I mean, I think we're moving towards a clear-cut okay from ownership.
Okay.
So I think that's it would be tough to answer that, but I think I feel like nothing's been interrupted and that we're moving towards that clear-cut answer from ownership.
When you make a presentation to the board and to ownership and say, I want, you know, this money to do this, do you have to say, if you give me X, we will make Y?
By the way, I just want to interrupt the interview to tell you my 15-year-old son just texted me, is CC a possibility?
See?
So I want you to know, like, I get grilled. I want you to know I get grilled not only, you know, by you guys, but I get grilled by my 15-year-old son from school who should be in class right now texting me. He's just probably got on MLB Trade Rumors.
Probably between
classes.
Or
he's a Bleacher Report guy, not an MLB Trade Rumors, because that's that generation.
Isn't the son that went out for Halloween dressed as Victor Martinez.
That's the same guy.
That's the same guy.
Yeah.
He did that.
He's 15 now. He was like 7. That's a true story. Yeah,
he went out as the guy who traded Victor Martinez.
In a Red Sox uniform. Victor Martinez in a Red Sox uniform.
Yeah. Wow. I'm sure he's between classes, and I'm sure you'll give him a different answer than you give us about that. But also...
Not really. I don't trust him at all.
But so do you have to say we're going to make this much money if you spend this much money, or is it more of a, this is what we need to do?
I mean, it's you have to make a business case, like any business whatsoever, but it's a combination of this is what we need to do, and this will help us make this much money to offset it.
How difficult is it going to be to renovate Rogers Center basically from November to March?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be one of the challenges. It's an interesting, and I think there'll be certainly some, look, you go to a hotel and you see, you know, a sign that says, excuse our appearance, we're under renovation or we're under construction. So there'll be probably some interruption at times for fans and some, but I think it'll be cool to think about, oh, what's behind that curtain? What's behind that? You know, what's happening? So, listen, I just hope we move towards having that problem and that dilemma. I feel like we're moving in that direction, and I think all of us will deal with a little inconvenience knowing what's on the other end. If we can live with Eglinton under complete disrepair for a decade, we can certainly live with a year or two of Rogers Center.
I was going to say the Gardner under repair. Most of our lifetime.
I guess I'm impacted by Eglinton more.
Yeah,
so.
The Gardner's the bane of my existence.
Yeah, mine too.
You mentioned CC Sabathia. You opened the door, so I'm going to walk through it. You know him probably as well as anybody in baseball. Was that it's CC going to talk to him?
Yeah.
Or was that?
I would just, again, without characterizing or commenting on that meeting directly, I just say, the nature of our situation, which is we're probably going to be late movers in anything just because we've got a relatively complete team now. So we're just looking to improve. Ross has been clear. We're looking to improve middle infield. We're looking to improve in the corner in the outfield. And we're looking to improve our starting pitching and maybe our bullpen. So if you start with knowing you've got guys and you guys have it right in front of you, you can fill roles internally right now with, especially since we got traded for Aledmys Diaz. So we've got people to fill roles.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a question of how much better can the people out there who trade or free agency help you improve your team. So you look at the baseline, the guy you'd acquire. So we're talking to everyone,
mm-hmm.
because we've got a limited amount of dollars, and how we allocate that to get better will be the question, and how Ross and our baseball ops team decide the best way to do that moving forward. So you're going to hear our name tied to everyone where an agent feels like it best serves to have our name tied to them. That I'll pivot to CeCe and just say, you know, there are moments in your career when you think back to knowing a kid when he was 17 years old. And, you know, for me, C, and thinking about his journey, the ups and the downs in his journey, thinking about the things he and I shared, you know, and have been through together, good and bad. You know, he's one of those guys, as I've watched him emerge as a professional, as a, you know, potential Hall of Fame pitcher, and maybe even more important to me, you know, a man, you know, a father, an incredible father and husband and leader in a clubhouse. You know, to me, those are the relationships, and those are the those are the points of development that define, you know, your career as you sit and look back. So I have different feeling for CeCe than most people would look at. I'm not looking at him just as a guy to pitch. And so when I see him, whether it was when he came in town with the Yankees or when I see him in this context, of those, that's what I think about when I see CeCe Sabathia.
We know that, as you mentioned, Ross has been clear looking at corner outfield help. Would you take on corner outfield help if it was a mid-30, early-30s corner outfielder, or would you...
It would depend upon length of term of contract, okay, probably more than anything else. I mean, we clearly need to get younger, but we also are looking at a shorter window at the major leagues right now, so I think, you know, we've got the market cornered on the over 32, you know, so I think, we ultimately, the only way to get younger is to continue to develop our players and naturally have them progress to the big league. So I wouldn't answer that any other way in any other question, left, right, you know,
sure,
age, you know, we just want to get better. So if the best player out there, you know, is a little older, then that's the guy we'll go after.
There's been a suggestion in the move, Manny Machado's move, talking about his move to shortstop and the possibility that he's that the Orioles are taking offers for him, that the Orioles may give teams a window to talk to Manny. And again, I know this is hypothetical, but may give teams a window to talk to Manny before a deal is made to see if he can, you know, maybe Manny signs a long-term contract this year. Philosophically, and again, hypothetically, but you do have Josh Donaldson, who's a free agent. Do you have any... would you have any issue if a team called you and said, Mark, we're interested, we'd like to talk to him and see if we could get him signed?
Yeah, I definitely extension. Will not comment on how that pertains to Josh Donaldson.
Okay, in general.
In general, I would say I'm not a black and white guy. I think I've given you that answer before,
that's
right?
Perfect.
Like, I think if situation dictated that and that was important, I would tend to probably lean no on that, you know.
Okay.
But I don't believe in unequivocally saying that a situation wouldn't dictate that.
Yep.
So,
perfect.
That's just the easiest way to answer that.